The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 28th of October, 2019. On the podcast today, Gil Holzman, co-founder and chief executive officer of Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas, that's ECO, provides an operational update following its two recent oil discoveries in offshore Guyana. Also on the podcast, Nuno Sacramento, Chief Operating Officer of SafeStay, SSTY, and Nuno discusses their 17th acquisition, a prime boutique hostel located in Athens. Also, Alexei Churikov, Strategic Advisor to the Board of Eurasian Mining, discusses their recent news and plans going forward. And as always, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. And if you receive an RNS via our app, then by all means, give it a thumbs up. And if you'd like the content, of course, and it could be featured on the podcast and, of course, on the front page at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Gil Holzman, co-founder and chief executive officer of Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas, ECO, is the ticker. Gil, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much, Justin. Good morning and good start of the week.
Yes, very good. Well, it's been good for you of late altogether, everything. And you've provided an operational update last week, and it's been nice to get into that. But as always, Gil, if someone's listening right now and they've never heard of Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas, can you just summarize what you're about, please, for them?
I can't imagine of anyone haven't heard of Eco Atlantic, but we are an oil and gas exploration company. We have blocks in the two most prospective and hottest exploration areas in the world. One in Namibia, in West Africa, Southwest Africa. We have four offshore blocks in the Wallabies Basin, which will see a lot of activity in the year to come. And we have the prize block in Guyana, offshore Guyana, in partnership with Tullow and Total, where we made two significant oil discoveries in August and September, a few months ago, and currently busy analyzing the oil discoveries, the magnitude of the oil discoveries, in preparation for next year, full of activity.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's go through that, the Guyana operational update. What's happening at the moment? And then we'll go on to what's going to happen. Because what's happening at the moment?
So, as you recall, Justin, and we spoke about it, we had two oil discoveries in our first two drilling attempts in this very prospective block. We announced in the middle of August the first significant oil discovery, which actually exceeded our pre-drill expectation, the Jethro 1 discovery, which is a significant and a considerable oil discovery. As Tullow, the operator, commented back then, recoverable and producible discovery. And exactly a month later, we had another oil discovery, second discovery in the second attempt, the Joe 1 well, which also discovered oil in the range of our pre-drill expectations. And we're currently analyzing both discoveries in order to come up with the strategy for next year. Joe, as we see, it has the potential to grow bigger than we initially announced, and we're currently reviewing it. We're also reviewing the Jethro discovery, analyzing the porosity, the gravity of the oil, all the parameters of the reservoir, in order to, as I said, to come up with the drilling plan for next year. In parallel to that, and exactly a few days ago, I think it was 4 or 5 days ago, our neighbor to the south, Repsol, the operator of the Kanuku block, again in partnership with Tullow and Total, spudded the Karapa 1 well. Karapa is a Cretaceous target, and I believe that we will have results from Karapa, which will be which will add a lot of information on the entire area by the end of November. And then we will be in a position to basically to reprocess all the 3D data with the two discoveries results and the wells results from Carapa in order to come up with the plan for next year. One thing I think it's very important to mention, and this is why we came up with the update to the market, because again, as a junior oil company that is so busy drilling and exploring this prospective block, the Joe and Jethro discoveries were very, very significant, not just for the oil that we found there, which we estimate to value over $300 and $350 million net to us, but also because it opened, first of all, it proved the entire lower tertiary section through the Jethro discovery and the last year Hammerhead discovery made by Exxon on the adjacent block, which looks to extend into our block. The Joe discovery opened a whole new play in Guyana, which is the upper tertiary, which in turn, because it's so shallow, it's much more economic in the sense that, you know, for example, the well cost for Jethro cost us exactly half of exactly half than Jethro. So So not only that we discovered oil, we also opened a whole new play in the upper tertiary. We proved the lower tertiary, and what it does, it now upgraded and surfaced additional targets and additional leads on the block that will be subject for additional exploration next year. We currently have an inventory of more than 20 prospects and leads on this block. Some of them are very, very big, over 500, 600, 700 million barrels. And as I said, this is a very, very interesting and attractive exploration area, which will warrant additional work coming next year.
Yeah. And so when are you expected to have the CPR up then, the updated CPR?
Yes, our current CPR, which was published in March, did take into account those leads and prospects that we saw back then, before we drilled Jethro and Joe. As I said, Jethro and Joe and later this year Carapa will add a lot of information on what we see on the block. The sheer fact is that Joe and Jethro de-risked many other leads and prospects in the area that has the same characteristics. So I can expect that once we finish the analysis on Jethro and Joe and we will have results from Carapa, we will be able to publish a new CPR, which in turn, as I said, will add additional prospects to the ones we already have, so potentially more volume. And more than that, it will de-risk or will higher the chances of success on some of the prospects that we see that has a very clear correlation to the current oil discoveries that we already have.
Yeah, okay, marvellous stuff. And but it couldn't have gone better for you, really, could it? It's gone as well and beyond expected, isn't it?
Actually, I don't remember any, you know, probably there are, but I don't remember many success stories such as this, hitting oil on the first two wells in the first two Wildcat wells in the first two attempts. Mind you, the hit ratio of Exxon, they drilled 16 wells and they had 14 big discoveries. So they are at over 90% hit rate. We are at 100% hit rate, and hopefully we can continue with this hit rate and we will end up with what seems to be and should be a multi-billion barrel block.
Yeah, well, if you continue to do that, Gil, people will start to think you have special powers beyond what you have already.
Yes, it's a lot of luck, but a lot of science that put into this effort. We are very fortunate to have the Talo exploration team as well as the Total exploration team next to the table together with our small but very experienced team. I think that the combination of these three teams together at the technical meetings table brings us to identify those prospects, to identify the best way, the best places to drill, and as a result we came up with two discoveries. I tell you, Justin, we have a problem. But it's a very good problem to have. We have too many, or not too many, but we have so many prospects and leads and plays on our block that we actually should strategize very carefully together with our partners in order to come up with the drilling plan for next year, which we are planning to announce towards potentially the end of the year or beginning of January, that will reflect the strategy. So one could turn into early production, for example. One could decide to keep on adding resources and reserves on the block. We see, as I said, we see now a very a few significant targets with much higher chances of success that were de-risked because of the Joe and Jethro discoveries. So there's so much on our hands and there's so much on the drawing table that we should carefully pick up the right targets for next year.
Yeah, well, it's a problem I'm assuming many junior oil explorers would love to have. You know, it's one of those kind of problems. Marvellous stuff. So in summary, as always, Gil, for someone listening right now, if they're not following the story, just give them those three reasons why they should add you to their watch list, please.
Before I do that, I would remind you that we have a bigger problem even, because we also have Namibia. And when I say problem, of course, I'm joking. Namibia is seeing an increased interest from all the big companies, oil companies around the world. It's seeing a big, bigger activity, drilling activity, with at least three wells planned for 2020. The first one in April or May. So Namibia is still a very focal point for us. For additional exploration, additional value creation, and I wouldn't exclude additional developments coming out of, or news coming out of Namibia in the next few months. Mm-hmm. And per your question, the three reasons to follow us is naturally the Windway block in Guyana, the Namibia increased activity and interest, and in general our corporate, which is potentially one of the most attractive and interesting companies, oil and gas companies on it.
Marvellous stuff. Gil, good to chat to you as always. And like you say, lots going on, so hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Nuno Sacramento, Chief Operating Officer of SafeStay, SSTY. Ticker. Nuno, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me again.
Yeah, well, you're keeping busy. I mean, you're keeping to your promise by the looks. So you said you get to 20 hostels by the summer of next year. You're getting closer and closer. The 17th now, and we'll get into that in a bit. Before we do, as always, if someone's not familiar with SafeStay, just summarise the business if you could, Nuno.
Well, we own and operate international hostels, and we think we're making a little bit of a difference in the market. The way we see it is the hostel market is the next accommodation segment to explode, and hostels are more or less in the same position as the budget hotel was maybe 20 years ago. It's already there. It has a huge market share, but and it has great appeal to millennials and Generation Z, which are the next big wave of consumers coming into the market. But the hostel market is still operated in a very amateurish manner, small groups, a lot of private owners. What we think we can do is to go on and consolidate the market with a high-quality service-driven product that then becomes a powerhouse and in the value segment of the market.
Yeah. And at the moment, like I said, we're at this 117, you have ambitions to get to 20 and beyond that?
Yes, no, we've got our growth mapped out to 40. We know exactly what cities we want to be in, what cities we want to be in with more than one property, and what cities we want to avoid at this stage because they're either too expensive. We're also very clear on our business model. We would like to make sure that we're very balanced about our debt, we're very balanced about our acquisitions, and investors will see that we've got a mixture of freeholds, our property in Pisa, the property in Glasgow we just acquired, our property in York, they're freeholds, and we've got some long-term leaseholds in our largest properties, and that is the two in London and the property in Edinburgh. And then in Europe, in order to expand and in order to go and test some markets, we're finding some really advantageous leaseholds. And the most recent one, and the one I really want to tell you about, is Athens Style, which gives us great, great location. I mean, we're a stone's throw away from the Acropolis. We're right where you want to be because that is the young, vibrant part of town. And we've got a great property with sufficient scale. We don't want anything too big when we enter the market. We want to go and see the market, test it, see what the potential difficulties are, and then if the market proves to be as strong as we think it is, and we think Greece is a great market for us, if the market is as strong as we think it is, we then go and acquire a second property. But we're centrally located, surrounded by all the exciting stuff that our millennials and Generation Z kids are looking for, the clubs and the vibrant part of town. And with a deal that we tested, that we now have with 17 properties in the portfolio, we've tested all the risks that could come with any acquisition. And we're very certain that as we move forward, we're making acquisitions that are pretty solid, and this one is one of them.
Yeah, that's core to your strategy, is make sure you're acquiring hostels in these locations that will always be very popular. And like you said, this is no exception. It's right next to the Acropolis, and that will never not be visited. It'll always be highly visited, so it's in that area. And just explain, so you're paying 1.5 million, and when will this start to, be accretive to the revenue? When is this coming on board?
Well, and that's the beauty of it. We take over on the 15th of January, and immediately from day one, we start generating revenue. And from day one, we start contributing to EBITDA with some positive numbers. And that is the beauty of acquiring operating platforms. There is no lag, there is no development stage. We walk in, we start making money from day one and contributing to add value to shareholders. Tomorrow we're opening Glasgow. The deal was completed last month. I spoke to you about that one as well. But from tomorrow, Glasgow is contributing with revenue and contributing to EBITDA. The same situation happens with Athens. And as you say, these locations are very resilient. Our business says very low risk. We're in great locations. We're not buying anything peripheral. We're making sure that we're exactly in the right location. And with Athens, we're starting to build the best network in terms of hostels in Europe. If you start looking at our distribution, without boring you with a map, we've created a network that is serviced also by Interrail. So you can now just go across all the Safe State properties using Interrail, which we think is absolutely fabulous.
Yeah, absolutely. And just talking about the hostels now, you say Glasgow's coming online. Which of the hostels so far have you agreed to do but are not yet coming online revenue-wise, and when will they be, hopefully?
So we've got Paris, which we're still thinking we'll bring online around September 2020, and that has been the plan all along. Construction in Paris is complicated. And we've got Venice, which is, we've signed the contracts last month. The signing, the legals have been somewhat protracted, but we're ready to go. We've got architects and interior designers. Now it's all being worked and it's all being developed. We think we might be able to start construction or development of the site sometime around March, April, and that would give us an opening date sometime a year and a half later. It's such a fabulous acquisition, Venice. We have to do some of these slower pipeline because of the value it adds to the business, but we want to have a good mixture of development pipeline and operating businesses that we engineer immediately into our portfolio. And they start giving us sufficient self-funded funds to continue to grow at a good pace.
Yeah, that's key, I suppose. You say this purchase is from existing cash flow, isn't it? And the more, I suppose, you acquire, and like you say, you've got economies of scale there, the more leverage you can get, isn't it, I suppose?
Absolutely. And it's so interesting that we now, for every property we add to the portfolio, we can become more people efficient rather than headcount inefficient, because we can start plugging in some automation that is really valuable but didn't make sense up to a certain point of growth. And now we're at a point of growth where we know we don't really need to increase the core costs of our team, but we can start adding automation. And with automation comes a much more scientific way to look at data and how we can service our guests and develop the business in a much more robust manner.
Yeah, and you've mentioned quite a few times food and beverage is going quite well for you.
It's going exceedingly well. I'm not allowed to get into numbers, but I'm very, very, very confident in the numbers we'll publish this year. And it's been very exciting because we're aggregating properties and being able to grow our occupancy. And we're growing our F&B by some very good numbers, more than double digit, but a bit north of 10%, which is great. Because as you bring in scale, if you still manage to bring a wave of continued growth of the existing portfolio, then the revenue volume starts becoming very, very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And just mention again, because someone did say they questioned the freehold and leasehold. So what's the advantages and disadvantages of this then, having freehold and leasehold?
Well, to be clear, we're an operating business. We're not a property business, and our ambition is to create a pan-European brand that becomes absolutely redefines the hostel market. Mm-hmm. And to achieve that at the right pace, because there is a right window of time to get it done. One of our ambitions is to have a good balance in the portfolio, potentially 30% freeholds, 30% long leaseholds, and then 30% of shorter leaseholds, which is the typical arrangement in Europe. But because we're an operating business, taking leaseholds is a sensible approach, and it gives us some speed to market and speed in our growth curve. As long as the numbers stack up, and what we're concerned with is any new property needs to be adding to the EBITDA contribution. Mm-hmm. Without diluting it. We don't want to take leaseholds that start diluting our expectations in terms of EBITDA. And we model everything very thoroughly. We've got a very strong chief finance officer. So we're modeling everything very, very with great care to make sure that the contribution is right. But it will be a balance of freeholds, long leaseholds, and the shorter leaseholds that are more common in Europe.
All the stuff. Okay, Nuno, three reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, it's a shame we're always involved in some kind of acquisition and I can't buy shares. The share price is very low, I think, to what I believe the business is worth. So it's a great time to buy SafeStay shares. The first thing is we've got a great management team. Larry Lipman, your listeners will know of him from group like Safe Stories. He's been there and done this thing of growing your business and eventually generating great share value for investors. Hervé Deligny is the CFO. He comes from Accor. Great experience. He understands everything about acquisitions and is making sure that every next property makes absolute sense. And then we've got a very well-run business. We've been delivering on expectations for quite a few years, since the IPO in 2014, I'd like to say. The other reason is that we've got a proven low-risk model. With 17 properties, we meddled with more or less everything, and we can clearly say that it's a low-risk model. We're very competitive, and we've got sufficient differentiation, I think, for millennials and Generation Zers to start using us as their preferred choice. The last thing is very clear growth strategy. I've been telling you for quite a few podcasts that we want to get to 20 by the summer next year. I think we're ahead of that. We've got our growth mapped out to 40, and I would like to think that we get there around 2022. So in the quantum, in a revenue-rich business like ours, is very, very important, and it just becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Not investing in SafeStay would be, I would love to be able to buy more shares.
Marvellous stuff. Nuno, good to chat to you. And like I say, lots going on, always busy. So no doubt we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alexey Chirikov, Strategic Advisor to the Board of Eurasia Mining. EUA is the ticker there. Alexey, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin. Nice to meet you too.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's nice to have you on. We've not spoken before. And by way of introduction, can you give a bit of background on yourself, please, Alexey?
Sure. Currently, I am a strategic advisor to the board of Eurasia, and my main experience is coming from Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley, where I've been involved in a number of M&A deals, selling Russian mining companies to investors from all over the world.
Excellent stuff. So big experience, big names, especially in Russia. So you've announced some news there. We're engaging CITIC and VTB to work with you. Can you explain a bit more about this, please?
CITIC and VTB Capital are the largest investment banks in China and Russia, respectively. And they have the biggest investor reach, not only in China and Russia, but also in the rest of the world when it comes to marketing Russian mining companies.
I understand. And who are Eurasia's contacts with CITIC and VTB?
In CITIC, we are sponsored on a very top level by the chairman of CITIC Merchant, the investment and merchant banking arm of CITIC, as well as by his advisor, who used to be the CEO of Gazprom Bank Asia Pacific. In VTB, we are supported by the top people as well, whom we worked on multiple transactions previously. Both banks are the best you can possibly get to market and sell Russian mining companies.
I understand. And I know you can't mention any names, but are you in talks with just one or several strategic investors now?
It has been always my habit to talk to multiple strategic investors to make sure a good deal can be negotiated. This is one of the key lessons I learned very well working for bulge bracket investment banks selling Russian companies.
Understand. And at MT Kola project, you have upgraded your potential resources from 2 million ounces to 15 million ounces of palladium, including the flanks. What does this mean for Eurasia, Alexey?
It means that our value potential has been upgraded to a completely different league of major palladium companies. And we believe that 15 million ounces of palladium is just the beginning. We are looking at several other licenses at Kola with over 40 million ounces of palladium in total. Having said that, already with up to 15 million ounces of palladium, we are extremely attractive to large strategic investors.
Mm. And we've seen there's been recent sort of palladium acquisitions, to name a few. You've got Stillwater for almost $2 billion US by Sibiani in 2017, and North American Palladium for approximately $1 billion Canadian dollars by Impala Platinum earlier this month. So are you benchmarking your valuation against these deals?
Yes. And also, you should not forget Kevitsa project, sold for over $700 million US dollars in cash, and Sukhanka project, sold for significant cash consideration and an additional 2% net smelter royalty over the life of the project. And mind you, Sukhanka is far behind our MT Kola in their development schedule. You can find more details on this project in the Aptivus research on Eurasia of last year. These two projects are just several hours' drive from our MT Kola mines.
I see. And right now, how do you value your projects, you know, taking into account all these deals happening in the PGM space, Alexey?
We are benchmarking ourselves against this deal in the first instance. You can also refer to the same Aptiva research on Eurasia, where, on the basis of our feasibility study, the NPV was stated at over $240 million US dollars. And mind you, this research was done at the palladium price around 1,000 US dollars per ounce. Now, the palladium price is over 1,700 US dollars per ounce. That's a big change for us, because the whole price increase of 700 US dollars per ounce goes straight to our profits. Thus, the NPV goes up, not by 70%, but much, much higher.
Yeah, and the share price has been moving quite amazingly recently. I mean, what would you say about the share price? More than doubling yesterday, up again today, from 0.48 to over 1 pence. What's your thoughts there?
This is just the beginning. Smart investors can benchmark our NPV and the recent deals in the PGM space to our enlarged resources of up to 15 million ounces of palladium.
Excellent stuff. Okay, Alexei, on the podcast every day, I highlight top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. So right now, to get on people's watch lists, and you have been actually number one the last few days, the most followed, but to, if someone's listening to this right now, likes the sound of the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, could you give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please?
Sure, of course. We are one of just a few independent palladium companies remaining in the market. We are in production and making money. We have simple and very clear strategy with all required resources to succeed.
Excellent stuff. Alexei, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Vast Resources, down 3.1% at 0.310. At four, Bidstack Group. A bit of a sell-off there, 10% down at the moment, 17.75 pence. That's because, I mean, as a lot of people said, because directors have sold, but they still hold big, you know, stakes in the company. And you've got to, you know, accept that every now and again, the directors, you know, have to have some kind of reward for backing the company and working so hard, you know, creating the company. So it may seem, you know, a bit of a worry, but you know, it's a small amount compared to what they actually hold in the company. Okay, at three, Emerson, down 1.3% at 3.8 pence. At two, Nuformix, down 7.8% at 10.88. And at number one, Eurasia Mining, of course, the guys on today, up 57%. Oh, as I said that, it jumped again. 76% to 1.8%. Pence. Wow. And top five most liked RNSs come from the following companies. Cadence Minerals. Aroca confirms high-grade nickel at Saints. At four, Rockfire Resources. Extensive sulfide zone at Plateau. At three, Dev Clever Holdings. Strategy update. Educate platform. At two, Emerson PLC. 72% increase in resource estimate potash project. And number one, SafeState Acquisition. Of course, I just chatted to Nuno on the podcast today. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.